Hello and welcome to the Rhizone, the Horticulture Leaders Podcast. I'm William Clausen. I recently had the opportunity to sit down with Will DeRover, who runs the Continuous Improvement Department at Qualitree. In this episode, we discussed what does a Continuous Improvement Department do, how is it structured, and what's the philosophy and approach when implementing continuous improvement. And we also had the opportunity to discuss some of the fascinating projects that they had worked on and improved at Qualitree. Here's my conversation with Will. Hello, Will. Thanks for joining me in the studio today.
You're well.
Thanks for agreeing to talk to us about continuous improvement. I'm definitely looking forward to our conversation just with some of the stuff we've shared earlier. So you work here at Qualitree,
yes.
And this is where we're recording the episode as well. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how you fit into the Qualitree ecosystem, if you will.
Yeah, so at the very beginning, I was born on this property or 100 yards away. And so I've kind of been with Qualitree my whole life, more or less. Not as an employee, but as a family member of the owners. And I've been in the nursery industry since I was 5 years old. So it's not new to me at all. And I've done a few things in between now and then. I've, from 5 till 17, I worked at my uncle's nursery, doing nursery work of all sorts, from manual labor to driving tractors to managing crews. And then in between, I worked 2 years as a millwright at a local company here. And then for another 2.5 years after that, I moved out of province and we own part owners in a dairy farm in Manitoba, which was quite the experience at 19 years old. So we learned a lot of hard lessons out there. And then since then, we've moved back to BC with my family, my wife and 3 boys. And I've back at Qualitree full time here for about 2.5 years now.
Okay, so you've been back for 2.5 years. So you said back to Qualitree, but you hadn't really worked at Qualitree prior to this, had you?
No, not as an actual employee. I've been around and helped out, but
just the sun free labor kind.
Yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly.
So sounds like a pretty interesting journey for a young guy already. You moved out of province, ran a dairy farm, and were involved in hunting as well and stuff there. Is correct?
Yeah, correct. So after the dairy farm, we sold that, and then for about a year or so, we still own the hunting outfitter, but we did that. We ran it for about a year and now our business partner runs it and we're back here in BC.
So you're not actively involved in that
No.
piece anymore.
Exactly.
So what got you interested in coming to Qualitree? Sure, there's the family connection, but you know, with all of those steps, what brings you here?
Well, the very original way that I came to Qualitree is that I had started a separate little business with my opa, actually, who was one of the very original partners of Qualitree, and we were building shelving for our racking system that we ship out on. And that whole deal transpired that Qualitree bought that little idea from us, and I came on as an employee as part of that whole deal, and I ran the wood shop for the first few months that I was here.
Okay, so interesting. So here we are. We're going to talk about continuous improvement today, and your path into Qualitree was part of a continuous improvement project.
Absolutely.
You built this little project, this idea, this concept that you and your opa had put together, and then part of the package was you came into Qualitree as well when they took that over. So just curious, where is that project right now?
It's still up and running. We've systematized it so good that, and no, it's very hands-off, and the foreign workers run it. And the shop just runs by itself during the busy season and sits empty when it's where we're not using it. But that same system is still actively being used.
So they integrated it right into Qualitree and it just became part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had a pretty fascinating, interesting conversation with Hank Rosendahl on a previous episode of the Rhizone podcast that you're on here as well. We talked about, continuous improvement, automation, mechanization, lean, all that stuff. And I'd like to even say Hank is probably the pioneer of continuous improvement at Qualitree. So
Absolutely.
We had a fascinating conversation around that. So now we're talking about a continuous improvement department. Take us through that journey. Like how did it come from just having one person really interested in that to buying an idea or bringing an idea from the outside in and now being a department?
Yeah, so
just the history or the time.
Yeah, so after I ran the wood shop for a while and we systematized it so that it could run by itself. And then I had worked in with millwrights for a couple of years, so I was interested in machinery and automation and that kind of stuff. So I kind of automatically just was drawn towards that part of Qualitree. And so I started working with Hank and with operations. and with new machinery and processes and stuff like that. And for a while I worked under Hank with him, and he's focused more on the outbound stuff where we get new machinery into Qualitree, and he gets ideas from Europe and other places and kind of brings them here for us to implement. And I was more of the, we would get the machinery and then implement it on the floor, and more of the on the ground process improvement stuff. And since then we've decided that because we were focused only on operations, it would be good to kind of expand that to include all the different departments of Qualitree. So about a year ago now, we decided that we should start this as an actual department so that we can incorporate all the areas of Qualitree into improvement and not just the processes on the floor.
Okay, so Hank is you know, pioneering a lot of the stuff like robots and automation and mechanization, yeah, and things like that. And you decide that this needs to be bigger than that. So is there, when you became a department, is there like a whole bunch of people working in this department, or what's, how does the department fit together?
Well, right now it's just a department of one, just me. But the way that I'm able to interact with all the different teams is that we have a committee, the Continuous Improvement Committee, which is involved people from operations, now sales, growing, all the departments. And so we have key players in all those areas that come together on a regular basis where we problem solve and work through some of the issues together. And that's the way that we're able to bring all parties together and work on improvements as a whole team, not just little separate teams working on individual projects.
Okay, so the department is really you, which is like facilitating the continuous, yeah, improvement, but you actually have a committee. Yeah. Just one committee, or how does that work? Because if I recall correctly from our earlier conversation, it's kind of shifted over time.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. So it started out in the beginning, even before the department, that it was we called it a operations improvement committee, or I can't remember exactly what we called it, but it was just focused mostly on the operations. So planting and sorting and all that kind of stuff. And we've done that for a couple of years now, and it worked really well for its intended purpose. And now we've expanded it. So it's actually three different committees, one that's still focused on very heavily on operations, one that's more growing R&D, that type of stuff. And then the third one, which is admin, sales, marketing, that type of stuff, more like the office side of things.
Okay, so you've come to discover that having one committee to do all of that continuous, yeah, improvement is just not working quite well. So
exactly.
You split it off into three different like streams or subcommittees.
Yeah, exactly. We were realizing that it was too broad actually for, mm-hmm, the one team. So now we kind of split it up so that we can really focus on, say, this is operations week, and this is a growing week, and this is a admin week, where we're going to really heavily focus on those specific problems on the area. And on those committees, we still have representation from other areas of the company, so that we get that whole big picture look, and we're not just solving problems too narrowly. So
does everybody on that committee, I'm going to talk about how you get that in a moment, but does everybody on the committee have to be an expert in that area? So like if you're talking about sales or marketing, that you just have sales and marketing people on there, or is there like a blend of people?
Yeah, there's absolutely a blend. We'll have, we obviously need people that know exactly what's going on in those departments. And we'll also have people from other areas. So say in the sales and marketing group, we'll have people from operations and from growing who might not have any clue what's going on in marketing, but we need their input from how what we're doing in this meeting is gonna affect other people in the company.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I've heard of the concept before as well, is that the longer you're in something, the less aware you become of all the nuances and the pieces of that. So if you're in a process flow and you're working in it for a long period of time, you're less aware of all the things that are inefficient. How do you battle that in this committee structure? Like, are you including the people that are actually, like every time you run into a new continuous improvement, how do you get the buy-in or the details of the people who are actually working inside of it, and still that outside view of, hey, you're not noticing some things that are happening?
Yeah, so as a team, we'll highlight areas of improvement that we feel are important to work on. And then from there, we'll actually go down to the floor and talk to the people that are running the lines or are actually doing the work, and we'll go more in depth on a specific problem. But at the committee level, we try to stay a little high level and just to see overall where are our bottlenecks and where should we be focusing on. And from there, not in that group, but then we'll go with smaller teams and dive into these problems in detail.
Okay, so just to kind of paint that picture, you have you running the department, you then have three committees that are kind of informing the work that you're doing, yeah, but you may even have some projects that are running inside of each committee that will then bring in experts or
Absolutely.
Areas or whatever is needed. So it's really, yeah, a really hierarchical structure. How does the speed of something like that work, being three levels deep? Because I would imagine even maybe even an earlier question is, how do you get approval to go and do a big project like that?
Well, that's the nice thing that we found is because we have people from all other departments, we're quite quick on going in somewhere and figuring out a problem. It's not like we're all the way to the solution of something and then we've got to go get approval from the teams around it. We've kind of got everyone bought in at the beginning. So once we've gone down that road with the whole team, we can pretty much just implement it right away because everyone that needs to be there is there.
Okay. So the buy-in process of saying, hey, I need this team bought into this idea. So it's not a top-down approach where you say, mm-hmm. hey, we got this idea, we're going to implement it, now let's go get buy-in. It's really, the idea already has the buy-in built in because it's coming from the team that's...
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and that's the whole point behind the department too, and it's never going to be a department with 20 people and we come into an area and we fix your problems. It's always that we're the facilitators, that we come in and we help you fix your own problems, because I as one person, or if I have a team, we can't go in and solve every problem in the company. But what we can do is to highlight someone's problems, say, hey, you should probably talk to these four people, we'll get you guys together, and then you can solve your own problems. So it's absolutely a ground-up approach is what we're going for.
So that grassroots approach. So it's actually quite different than a lot of other departments in that area where, yeah. you know, if you have a sales issue, you go to the sales department and they're going to help you solve that problem. Whereas here, it's about this department's more of a facilitation kind of
absolutely.
Department who then gets the right parties involved and does that collaboration piece.
Yeah, exactly. And because I've myself, I'm not an expert in sales or marketing or growing or any of those things. But the one thing that I bring is I can come see things from an outside point of view and say, hey, I know that operations is going to be affected by this decision that's being made in the growing department. So let's get them in before we go too far down this road and work together so that it's going to not be like hammered on someone down the road so we can solve the problems together up front.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that you're not an expert. That was one of the things that I was interested in as well. So you're young, you've got millwright experience, ran a dairy farm, so lots of experience. Yet there's probably no way you could understand every process in the company just because of the size of a company like Qualitree.
Yeah.
So how do you go about that? Do you need to be an expert in the area, or how do you solve that problem of saying, well, we need to implement a solution, but you got to understand every nuance of that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it tends actually to be a benefit to not be an expert, because then I for sure don't know what I'm doing. So I have to go to the people that know and ask the questions. And because if I was an expert, I could kind of fall down the trap of saying, hey, this is how you should do it because I've done it before. Now I have to go and say, hey, what's going on here? Like, we feel like there's some money slipping between the cracks, or something's not as efficient as it should be. And like, what's going on? Like, help me to understand your process and what's going on in this area. Which automatically gets them thinking along, like, hey, how can we make it better? And it's not me coming into an area with like a helicopter and say, hey, fix this problem.
So how many times are you asking stupid questions?
Yeah, all the time. The more the better, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. So the mantra, and obviously I didn't mean that quite literally, but so the mantra, there is no such thing as a stupid question, is pretty true, because
exactly.
you're truly in that discovery mode of figuring out what's going on
yeah.
in order to then help solve it.
Exactly.
And do you find that manifesting in quite often, that you're like, hey, I don't know much about this, and you're seeing things that they are not seeing?
For sure, because I'm not, I probably have like the least day-to-day job in the whole company, because I don't have any responsibilities directly related to shipping a plant out the door or getting a plant trimmed or anything like that. So I'm able to keep that like kind of one step back approach and see things as they kind of flow around the company. And it's really nice to be able to go in somewhere and then ask those questions from someone. It's like, hey, what's frustrating with this process for you? And then like we can help fix it together.
Like what your pain points, what your
yeah exactly yeah.
So when what how does it work, or how much buy-in is there from the department that you're going to? Because clearly you're not going to have every person involved in the decision making of how processes get changed and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that that's a pretty tough thing to sway, or is the like how does that work in terms of the culture of the company and stuff?
Yeah, that's the joy of working with people, I guess, is that. There is people that know more than others, and sometimes you have to, for the sake of the business, just make something happen because we know that it's for sure the right thing to do. But of course, there's the fine line of getting the people from the bottom to come with the ideas, and then getting the experts to come with the ideas and actually just do it. So it's always that fine line of getting the buy-in from the people that are doing the work, and then combining that with the experience and the knowledge from people like Hank and some more experienced people around here.
So as you're painting the picture of how the structure fits together and how that works, is one of the images I'm getting is how does the work actually get done? Because you have decision makers, you have yourself facilitating all these committees. I imagine you can't do all of it, especially not if you're doing a lot of projects at the same time. Where's the actual work happening of, okay, we need to swap out this belt, we need to speed this up, we need to change that process? Who's doing that work?
Yeah, so that gets really into the nuts and bolts of how the committees work. So at a committee level, we'll have improvement ideas will have come through and they've already gone down the chute, which we can talk about later. But once we're at the committee and we're talking about this is a project that needs to happen, and we've got the ideas from the people and we've gotten the knowledge that we need, and something's actually going to happen. So everything is sorted into cases on our IQ software platform. And it's a super cool tool because all the information about this one project gets stored in one central location, and the communication happens there and everything happens there, including assigning tasks to, say, the maintenance department. Hey, we need a new belt on this conveyor because it could run 20% more efficient or whatever, those sorts of things. And those will get assigned directly out of there. So once we're done this meeting, our work for the week is pretty much done, like our work. And of course, I'm still going and talking and figuring out stuff the rest of the week, but the actual nuts and bolts happens right there in that committee meeting.
Okay, so you're having a committee meeting, you've created a case or a project in your software that Qualtree uses here, and out of that, you're making decisions, observations, all that stuff. So you're really project managing is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you're right away assigning tasks to people that are in the committee or outside the committee, or like you can...
Yeah, it can be anyone in the company. It doesn't have to be someone that was in that room there. It could just be we assign a case to Joe in the maintenance department and he's going to take care of making this happen.
Okay. And so that's really, so you're utilizing all the people power, the resources, everything of the company, and then just using this as a project management / facilitation committee or department.
Exactly. And like I was saying before, I don't have the bandwidth to do all of this stuff. All I can do is get the right people to do it. And those case management system is super good tool to figure out, hey, we're going to talk about this for 15 minutes. And by the end of this 15 minutes, we're going to have a task assigned out of here. And then from there on, I don't have to think about it again until that task is completed.
So how do you, just kind of shifting gears a little bit, actually, before I do that, one more question. How many people are on these committees? Like how does that structure fit together?
It's between 4 to 6 people usually.
We and that's try to, on each committee?
On each committee.
Interrupt. Okay.
Yeah.
There's three of those and then...
Yeah. So I'm the only person that's the constant in all three. And then, but we have some overlap between them as well because we need people from different departments. And we try to keep it small enough that we can be quick and agile and make decisions real quickly, and not too small that we don't have the right people in the room. So 4 to 6 was the magic number.
Okay. And so how does someone get on a committee? Do you appoint them?
No. So we have I'll just send out a message on our internal messaging platform. We do it periodically. We don't have a set schedule right now, but asking people, hey, do you want to be part of improvement teams at Qualtree? And there's a little bit of a vetting process where people have to, a little blurb about why they think they will be good in this team and what they can bring to it, what experience and what areas of the company they're passionate about. And of course, we don't want to discourage people from being part of improvement. So we try to make a spot for everyone that wants to be, while at the same time keeping our teams not too big.
So there's almost like a little bit of a vetting process, yeah, of your own employees and just making that little bit of healthy competition
to
try to get on there. And so I know this is fairly new, the last year or so this has all been working out. And has there been interest for people to join? Do people want to improve?
Absolutely. Just in the last couple months, like I was saying, we had our operations improvements committee, which was, I think, 6 people. That was the same for about 2 years. And then now that we're doing a bunch of iterations and improving the committee itself, and we have the 3 streams and we have, I think, like 15 people total that have come forward and say, hey, we want to be part of this. We want to be part of improvements at Qualtree, which is really encouraging to see. And it's super cool to have people from every department coming together and, hey, we want to solve problems together.
And this is really in addition. Of course, it's part of their workday, but it's really in addition to their own job, because a grower, for example, may be talking about issues on the sorting belt or on the or in another area that's not part of growing.
There's all kinds of benefits to being someone being on one of these committees. They get a better understanding of the rest of the company around their job, so they understand how what they do affects other teams, and vice versa. They understand what the problems that other teams have and how they can help when they go back to their own department and their own teams.
Was that intended, that cross-training like that? Because I know just working with companies and stuff in my line of work as well, is that's often a complaint of many companies, that one department is not understanding the way other departments work. Mm-hmm. Is that an unintended side effect, or was this something that was built into intentionally?
Well, it was the intention to get those other departments all working together. And my long-term goal, or hopefully short-term as possible, is to have this committee meeting kind of be the hub where all the teams come together and we solve our problems together, which is, if I'm doing continuous improvement properly, that's what it'll be.
Yeah, okay. And so that committee, let's talk about that. That committee is going to solve all these problems. How do you know there's problems out there? Because a lot of times you don't know what you don't know. So how do you know you're not efficient? I know I touched on some of this with Hank in terms of asking questions like, is this adding value? Is this adding cost? And all those kind of, pointed questions. But how do ideas come into, how do you come up with an idea? Someone walks around and says, hey, that should be improved, or how does it work?
Well, we have these cool things called the idea boxes that are locked on the wall. Just kidding. That's that's how we used to do it, but that doesn't work.
You used to have an actual physical box on the wall with a lock on it.
Yeah. I remember it was sitting out in a greenhouse years ago already. But so what we do now is also, again, on our internal platform, we call it Chatter. And people can come with any idea and post it on there with the hashtag idea. And from there, it'll get into my feed right away, and I can see all of the ideas that come through. And those ideas get vetted by the committee to see if, oh, this is something really cool, but is it actually going to benefit Quality? And is it maybe something we should just put on hold for 2 years because it's really cool, but not necessary right now? So it goes through a bit of a vetting process, but anyone can bring ideas forward, and they will get addressed one way or the other, either saying, thanks so much for your idea, we're going to put it on hold, or let's get you into this room and try to solve this problem that you see, or this new idea that you've come forward with.
So you have this internal social media system almost where you can just tag whatever concept you have, throw it out into the group and tag it with a hashtag idea, kind of like social media.
Yeah.
And you're constantly perusing those hashtag ideas.
Exactly. They show up in my feed every day or every week, whatever.
And then the whole committee goes through all of those lists, or just you do, and then it kind of gets, like, how does it distill out into an actual idea? That's an idea. How does it distill into a project?
Yeah. So I'll bring the new ideas to every committee meeting every week. Whichever ones have come up in the last 7 days, and we'll go through them and say, hey, is this something that we should like look at farther, or something we can just maybe say, thanks for your idea, we're just going to put on hold for now. And if we approve the hashtag idea into something that we're going to look at, then I create a case in that case management system I was talking about before, which then starts the gears turning of get this people involved, get the right teams involved to like, what's actually the problem here and how can we fix it together?
So how do you not get overwhelmed with the number of ideas? Because I can imagine if there's 15 people vying for positions on these committees in the first ask out, and there must be a lot of ideas coming up as well. So how do you not get overwhelmed with the incredible amount of ideas?
Well, just keeping track of them every week. And then for sure we have our meetings usually on Wednesdays. So for sure by Wednesday, the past 7 days worth of ideas are going to be taken care of one way or the other. And I got to say, most of them don't end up being something that we're actually going to do something about, but we'll put them on the back burner to automatically pop back up in, say, 12 months, or maybe we put them to November when we're a bit slower. But then the ones that are actually going to happen, they turn into a case. And like I was talking about, we can assign tasks and make stuff happen directly in the meeting there. So it's not like I have a huge list of things to remember to do out of that meeting. It's everything happens right there.
So it's just a real-time meeting planning and just real-time project management by committee, though.
Exactly.
So what happens? So someone puts out an idea. So I put out an idea. I think it's really good. How do I get say in, or how does it work when you say, no, we're not going to do this one right now? Is there communication back and forth to keep that dialogue alive? And because I imagine if you're not doing a lot of ideas, eventually that's just going to dwindle down to no ideas coming in.
Yeah, exactly. No, so we always have communication. Our initial reaction or whatever will be, say, hey, this, we think this is something that, that could be good for the future, but we don't see the need for it now. And we'll communicate that directly back to whoever brought the idea forward. And if they had some pieces of it that they weren't, hadn't communicated properly or something, they can come right back at us and say, hey, no, there was this added few parts that I didn't communicate properly. And this is why I think it's important right now. And it'll go back and forth until everyone's in agreement that this is not a good idea or a good idea, and we're going to keep going with it.
And you're using that same internal messaging platform to do some of that dialoguing and things like that.
Yeah, as much as possible. If we can avoid meetings when we don't need them, then we'll do that.
So we've kind of talked about the structure, how that's put together, how it flows, the communication, decision-making, things like that. How do you go about solving a problem? So you've now, someone came up with an idea, you've all voted that as a good idea for the company, it's going to improve something. How do you go about solving that? What's your first steps?
Yeah, so a little bit of a step back. We try to use lean methodology in problem solving. And so in answer to your question, we'll use the basics of lean, which is just mapping out a process step by step by step and finding the pain points, where is the most problems occurring at which step, and then really diving into those steps with the people that are actually doing the job because they know what's going on. So for example, we did a project on propagation of lavender, and we dove in there with Vanessa, who's our propagation team lead, and we had a bunch of people from operations and other departments. We all came together, hey, what's going on here? What can we improve? And through that process, we figured actually most of the whole system is working good. But at this step here, where we put moisture on the finished trays before they get to the greenhouse, that's being quite inconsistent. And there's a good chance that it's contributing to our follow-up percentage being higher than we would like. So we were able to step every one of those steps out and say, hey, this is where our problem is. And then we're able to get all the resources and get maintenance involved and everyone to build the misting tunnel, which we use now. So every tray is consistently misted as it goes out automatically. It doesn't take anyone's time. And so we solve that problem by stepping out the process and eliminating all the ones. Oh, this is good. This is good. This is good. Oh, problem here. So we dove in on that one and solved the problem.
So when the idea came up, like what would that idea have been presented as? Or is it presented as a, hey, we should have a misting tunnel? Or was it presented as, too many plants are dying after propagation? Or how does an idea like that or a problem come, how does it present it?
In that case,
going earlier back.
Yeah, in that case, it was more of the, we need to improve this sticking line because we're having seeing issues in the greenhouse side of things. Okay. But the same exact thing could have come up as an idea, hey, we need a misting tunnel. Okay. But in this case, it came up from this.
So how do you know there was a problem in the sticking line? Like, is that because someone suggested that, or was there, because what if the problem was somewhere else?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And again, in this case, someone did bring it up because they seen the end result and they wanted to improve the process which led up to the end result. But it could also be just the actual data that we're collecting and saying, hey, look, this crop has 80% success rate. This one has 95. This one has 70. So we better just look at the one that's at 70 because there's obviously a big room for improvement there.
And then you go through saying, well, what's the process of getting that plant to where it's growing and losing that 30%?
Exactly.
And so something before that must be the problem. And then you step that whole flow out. So you talked about lean. Mm-hmm. And so how do you take lean, which I think is a fairly regimented system in terms of here's all the flows and the process, this is how you do every step. How do you take something like that and apply it to, because it could be an idea, it could be a problem, it could be, who knows where the problem is. How do you take something that's as structured as lean and apply it to something that seems somewhat unstructured?
Yeah, so we try to use more the thinking of lean about stepping things out in a process of like, this is one step and nothing can happen until the next step. And just that way of thinking rather than all the tools of lean and say, this is a problem, we're gonna use the 74 different tools that come with the lean methodology. We don't get that detailed and you don't need to at all. Like when we got our instructor in here from lean and we got trained as lean professionals, he also said that you can just pick and choose different pieces of tools that we were taught to use to solve a problem. And the process flow mapping has definitely been the most effective for us, we've found. So we can step a process out from beginning to end and then find those problems like we were talking about.
So you see lean as a way of being or an approach, if you will, of really just taking things as sequential and making sure that one, the first thing will always affect the next thing after it, really linear and
exactly.
really efficient thinking. And then, yeah, there's 74 tools, but it's nothing more than a plumber's toolbox. And
yeah.
some days I use a wrench, some days I use, you know, something else, right?
Exactly.
A hammer or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you're not using all the tools all the time or really rigid about following the processes.
No, exactly. And you can use parts of tools and or you can use five of them on this if we need to go really in depth on something. But most of the time, it just takes one or two steps, and the biggest one is always figuring out what this step, what does that affect? That's the next step. What does that affect? That's the next step.
That's interesting, because what I find also in leadership and coaching and all that stuff is there's a lot of models of everything, and people try to follow the models really rigidly,
mm-hmm.
and in that is lost the opportunity to adopt the philosophy of what created all those tools, and the philosophy is more important, and I'm noticing that same with Lean. The philosophy is what's grabbing it, not necessarily the, oh, you have to use this tool in that case.
It's exactly. Well,
sometimes a wrench works, sometimes a different type of tool will work, right?
For sure.
So does everybody get trained in Lean? Because you said you got an instructor here to get certified in Lean. How does that roll out? Like, how do you have a committee that has people who are not certified? How do you play that out?
Most of our committee members are white belt certified in Lean already, and there's some that aren't, but our goal eventually is to have everyone Lean certified at Qualitree. If you're an employee, you're Lean certified, just to get that way of thinking so that everyone's thinking along the same lines. And like, again, it's not that we need to follow every single step of Lean, but it's the way of thinking, and that we need to, everything, if something is happening here, there was steps before and there's going to be steps after that you have to think about. You can't think about what's happening right now only.
So how do you know whether your process or your department is actually being successful? Like, sure, you're changing processes, and maybe with the sticking line, for example, you're seeing we went from 70% success rate to 75% success rate. There's some success there. Is that being interpolated into dollars, or how are you knowing what your return on investment is by running a continuous improvement department? Because you can imagine a committee meeting, 15 mm-hmm. people sitting together at their hourly rate, times all the time, times the work being done. There's a substantial cost there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really hard to put that type of work into dollars and cents, but some of the projects that we've worked on have really saved some pretty significant amounts of money for Qualitree. So we've definitely noticed that the improvements are happening, and the time that we're spending is majorly paying off. We've worked on all types of projects, and one big one that we've done in the last maybe 4 or 5 months is implementing a lot of visual management into different departments, so that instead of I'll take maintenance, for example, the maintenance manager will have to go every day to his guys and say, hey, do this, do that, and the other thing, and it could get really disconnected, and the guy's done his job halfway through the day and then he doesn't know what to do. He has to call, get on the phone, and a lot of phone calls and communication back and forth. So what they do now is they have this big whiteboard in their shop and they do a daily huddle every morning, and this is what we're going to do every day, stepped out for each guy. And there's another list on the side of little items to do, like, oh, if you run out of work at 3 o'clock and you need 2 hours of work, here's a couple things you can work on. And it's really streamlined the communication in that department, where everybody knows what to do. There's a lot less communication back and forth between guys. And they've seen it. They have two or even three pretty new workers in that department, and everything just is pretty seamless, and there's no confusion about what's going on. And everybody, the whole flow of the department itself just works better because the communication is there visual all the time.
So these are called huddle boards, you're calling them?
Yeah.
You use the term visual management. What does that mean?
Huddle boards is just a part of visual management, where it's all the communication that you do in a team is up there on the board at all times, where everybody can see it, and there'll be tasks assigned to different team members, and if it's up there for 3 days in a row, it's like, hey, why didn't you get that done? So it's just a way to communicate between your whole team and other teams walking by. Someone from a different department can say, hey, they're working on that, and that was a problem I had last week, so it's cool, they're working on it. So then you don't have to make a phone call and say, hey, are you guys working on this project that I wanted you to, kind of thing. So it works for multiple different ways.
So right now you're doing that with a whiteboard. Yeah. So is it tied in with like any metrics or dashboards or anything like that that are coming out of your software tracking system or whatever you may use?
Yeah. So there, different departments can use it in different ways. And that's what we found. Again, back to our talking about lean, you can use visual management in a thousand different ways. You just have to kind of form it to what works for your department and your team. So all of our different teams have huddle boards, but they all look completely different because what's important for them. If the growing department has crops that need to be at a certain stage at a certain time, and the maintenance department has two forklifts, for example, that need to be fixed by Friday. And so everyone has different metrics of what they need to measure to be successful in their own team.
Okay. So, and how did that flow? Did that come in as an idea? Where did an idea like that come from? Because I think that's fairly new here as well, correct?
Yeah, for sure. So
did it come in the same way as the other ideas or?
Not exactly. It was kind of being used mostly just in the shipping department for a while already. So Maria, who runs operations, she thinks along that lines of visual management and flow workflows and stuff like that.
Yeah, so and all the shipments that are going out, yeah, all the exactly. loads, they're all on a board.
It's on a board and everyone can see what's going on, what's coming up next. And so the flow is all pretty smooth. And so we went for like a one-day workshop with quite a few team members, I think like 10, and of department heads and stuff. And it was maybe a year ago now. And it was an offsite. We spent the whole day out there, learned a whole bunch about the value of huddle boards and how it can be implemented. And we took it back here and then rolled it out. Some teams took quite a bit longer than others, but most teams are now doing it. And we've seen across the board that the communication within teams is drastically better.
So this is an idea, which is interesting. This is an idea that came in from the outside. Yes, you were managing it somewhat. Maybe you didn't even call it a huddle board. So how does an idea like that come here? Is that just a workshop that came across your email, or how do you, or you saw it somewhere? How do you get ideas from outside the company? And
yeah, well, that one was, it was just something I had been reading and I was newly head of the continuous improvement department and say, hey, this looks like something that would really benefit us. And I knew that the communication is always an issue in a lot of teams. And I figured this would be something that works. And some teams didn't buy into it at first. And then one team was super successful, like I was talking to the maintenance department. And once they were successful, other teams were like, wow, those guys are really doing it. So then over time, everyone bought into it. And now most people are doing it.
So it kind of organically grew and the buy-in came that way.
Exactly.
So I'm sure that you're a firm believer of that too, is that not all ideas are good ideas.
Yeah.
So how do you, and I asked this question being in software and stuff myself as well in the past, knowing that just because it looks good and acts good somewhere doesn't necessarily mean it's going to fit here. So how do you not look out there and say everything is shiny and silver and I want a piece of that and bring it back to Qualitree? How do you measure that off and yet still stay sharp enough that you are able to take in new ideas like the huddle board?
Yeah, for sure. So that's a tough one. We always are on the lookout for new ideas, and like you're talking about, Hank is always looking for new machinery that's going to work for us, and now we're looking into robotics and a bunch of other stuff. But we always have to, it's always exciting to look at something new and say, hey, let's try it at our company. But we have to make sure we get all the right people in the room and talk about something and really flesh it out. Is this thing going to work here at Qualitree? Sure, it might work for a tire manufacturer and it might be great over there, but once we try to implement it here at a plant nursery, maybe some things are not going to work out. So we have to be able to, or willing to fail at some things, but at the same time, we've got to make sure that we talk to all the people that are going to be affected by a new idea or a new process, a new machine here at Qualitree.
Yeah, because I think I remember Hank actually talking about that. He said something about when you implement something, you always have to make sure that what comes before it and what comes after is going to fit with it. So you bring in this beautiful sorting machine or a robot sticking machine, but if the flow that goes into the robot hasn't changed at Qualitree or wherever you may be, that robot's going to fail.
Exactly, yeah. It has to be, it's also, maybe, I don't know if it's a struggle, but it's something that you got to be aware of, is that, like you were talking about, you can't just take something shiny from the outside, plunk it into our system and assume that it's going to work. You have to have the flow. You have to know where your bottlenecks are and then get a shiny machine to solve that bottleneck, not just plunk it in the system anywhere.
So I guess, but like you said, it's tough because there has to be a healthy balance of saying, okay, we know that there's a bottleneck here. So you go look for something to solve that bottleneck. But what if there is something out there that might solve that plus a whole bunch of other ones, but you're not looking for it because it doesn't fall into the realm of just that one bottleneck? Like, where's that? How do you stay agile, I guess, is the...
Well, we're always looking at new things, and we've tried multiple different pieces of machinery and processes that just didn't work, and we had to either sell them or they're sitting in the back still because we took a risk and we thought it was going to solve this problem we had, and it didn't. And that's the price you pay for trying to get new ideas, and some of them aren't going to work. That's just the nature of it.
Is someone measuring how many are back there?
Haven't gone to check for a while.
Okay. Tell someone back there. Because obviously there is a cost of doing that
absolutely.
As well, right? But, you know, as we talked about, I think it was with Hank as well, it's like there's never going back. There's just continuously improving, right?
Exactly.
So where do you go with that? A similar question for you then is what happens when you have a failure and it doesn't work? What do you do at that point?
Well, at a certain point, you have to cut your losses, and you can't keep spending time and money and people's limited bandwidth on something that is clearly not working. But at the same time, a good example is our planting machine that applies plastic. We were frustrated for about a year and a half. It was having issues. It wasn't working. Many times we're at the point of, let's just give up on this thing because it's not worth it. But there has to be some measure of stick-to-itiveness where you just stick to it and see it out to the very end and exhaust all options before you give up.
Yeah. And so is there an actual dollar value ROI happening during that process?
It usually ends up happening after the process at this point, and we could definitely improve there to measure it as we go and then have a cutoff point, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah. So what, any other areas where you might have used Lean and the whole committee? Like what are some of the big things you're working on right now, for example?
A lot of our projects are ongoing projects that have been going on for a couple of years, but one of the big wins we had this year was a lavender trimming machine that we were able to make it in line with buffer belts and a lot of automation and mechanization to save like over 50% cost on a million plants. So that's a huge win that we had this year, which we've been working on it for easily 2 years of new machinery and kind of making the system flow differently, and finally we were able to make it work.
So is this a machine you designed, or is this a machine you bought in that's meant to trim lavenders?
Well, we did buy it in it was meant to just plug and play. We had to do a lot of modifications and iterations, different blade types and configurations for it to work. And also we needed the plants to make sure they were straight. And so everything, again, before and after has to all work and
so
flow together.
So feeding a crooked plant into a trimmer gives you a crooked output. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, so you said there's a lot of modifications. It's meant to be plug and play. Is that quite frequent like that? Like if it's meant to be plug and play, is that because Qualitree hadn't brought themselves to that process, or was the machine not quite the right fit for the...
Well, a bit of both, I would say, because sometimes the machines that we'll get in were not specifically meant for the job that we're going to get it to do. But you have to think a little bit outside the box and say, hey, if it works for this, we can probably make it work for what we need it for, which there is no machine that exists to do this job. So in that example, it was kind of a similar thing. Most rotary trimmers stop the plant and then have it trim like that. But this one, we're able to do a continuous flow, which gets our productivity up.
So it wasn't designed to be a continuous flow, but you have turned it into that. So the plant just keeps on going and gets trimmed on while it's going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the machine is meant to do that, but not for the types of plants that we're using now. So it took, like I said, almost 2 years to figure it out. And because it's continuous flow, we need to feed like a lot of plants into it and get them out efficiently and make sure they end up where they need to go in their set down location. So all of those pieces need to be in play before you can make the whole system work.
And you provide that information back to the original designer of the machine, or like where does their... Suddenly you've basically invented a new machine.
Yeah, we work very closely with them. That in that case, it was Degremek from Belgium. And they're amazing with their customer service and making changes and sending us new parts to fit onto our machine and like custom making stuff for us. So they've been a very good partner in a lot of the innovation that we're doing.
Okay, so how do you, and just in my walking around here as well, I've seen some of the machines in action, like the sorting machine and stuff, which may not have come in through this, but it was definitely, you know, like you said, Hank may have identified, hey, this is a way of sorting, or whoever did in the committee. How do you not have it that, so you have this whole committee working on this concept that there's just so many people that are working on it that it just ends up being too many cooks, basically. Like, how do you facilitate that? Sure, you're doing, everyone doing task oriented, but some of these are pretty big ideas that are happening over the span of a year or two. And then you're not repeating the same mistakes because someone else tried it, but you don't know about it. And
yeah, for sure. There's always the element of that. And I guess we had chatted a little bit about this earlier, that you're better off to have more people trying to make the improvements than nobody. So, and we do manage each project on a, like a case basis. So this is, say, a sorting line, then everything that happens tries to stay in this box. But there's always going to be people that are actually doing the job on the line, and we encourage them to just try something. If you think it's going to work, try it and make it better.
So you were en route to saying what other maybe big things you're working on, and you just talked about the trimming one. Is there any other big ideas you're working on right now? Because go ahead.
Yeah, so the sorting line is one of them. And in that case, we're not saving a ton of labor right at this point. But the whole system, we had to make sure that it flows, again, like we were talking before, that the incoming and the outbound flow works, and the whole system works. And one of the big things we've seen is the consistency. So now we're sorting not just by visually looking at a plant and basing it off of a string or however we used to do it in the past. It's a camera with dimensions, and everything is consistent. So we know that when a plant goes through there, it's for sure fits inside of this grade, and there's no human error element anymore.
So it may not even be efficiency. So that kind of goes back to my earlier question of return on investment. It may not even be efficiency in terms of dollars or speed, but consistency. So now you have a consistent, same look plant that keeps coming out at the end of the belt.
Exactly, and there's no human error where we base one plant off of the one that's beside it. The camera bases it off of a set standard, and that way we're able to be more consistent to deliver to the product to our customers.
So kind of like the trimming machine, I guess, your first goal always is to meet that consistency, that idea, and then you start improving it and saying, how can we speed it up?
Because exactly,
if I recall, I think you briefly mentioned it, is the trimming machine, you increased its production, but it was already trimming for you for quite a while, or for a year or more, right?
Yeah.
Before you went and did that.
Exactly.
And then you applied that lean process saying, okay, let's go through each step and see how we can increase that speed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a 2-year project that we did a lot of different things, and we had used it for 2 seasons before already, but we weren't happy with it yet, the whole system and the flow of it. And finally this year we were able to see the real wins on that whole system.
So how do you continuously improve your continuously improving department? how do you make sure you don't get stale?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And for myself, I always have to be looking at, if I am just stuck in my ways, if I've been doing exactly the same thing for 6 months in a row and everything, if it's working really good, fine. And even if it is working good, it's like, what else am I not seeing? So I have to always be aware to take that step back, not be too stuck in the weeds of just doing my work every day, and always be like, hey, I gotta like take a half a step back even, and to see what's going on in the whole company, and try to go to departments that I don't speak of or speak to too often, and really understand, hey, what's going on here? So one thing that I've done in the past 2-3 months is I call it a practicum, where I actually go and work with people. So I went and worked with our CPT team, like the people, the bug people, where they go and scouting in our crops and see what the bugs are and thresholds and all that kind of stuff. And I actually worked with them for a week. And next week I'm going to work with sales for a week, actually do their job with them. So I say, hey, these are real pain points that you're dealing with, and then those will be stuff that come up in our committee meetings to try to solve.
So you're doing a practicum, like an internship, if you will, in that department. And is that to determine their pain points, or is that also a discovery exercise to like kind of get yourself outside of your comfort zone? Like, what's the...
Yeah, it's a bit of both. The main reason is for me to understand what their process looks like and how they're affected by all the other teams, so that when we go and are working on an improvement project, I can be like, oh, hey, that's going to affect the sales team. We better get them involved before we cause problems for them down the road.
Because you've seen it. You've seen that input coming into the department because you were there for a week.
Exactly.
So do you intend to do that year over year? Like, how does that not get recede into your memory, into the black recesses of your memory?
It'll definitely have to be something that's reoccurring. I don't know if it'll be every year with every department or what that cycle is going to look like yet, but it will have to be. I can't do it once and done because everyone's changing all the time.
So complacency is your biggest enemy.
Pretty much, yeah.
and you're saying that you need a mindset to be intentional about not getting complacent.
Exactly.
You always need to be challenging yourself. How do you deal with when other people challenge you and say you're being complacent? Like I'm sure that doesn't always feel the greatest. And so does that happen?
Yeah, and because my position is so new, it's very like in the developing stages still, and because it's continuous improvement, it'll always be developing, which is I get a kick out of that. And at the same time, it can be like you said, not everyone maybe sees what I'm doing, which because a lot of my work is behind the scenes. And so I have had that in the past where people are like, hey, what are you actually doing? And I just have to be really good at communicating that we're trying to, it's a ground up approach. I'm not going in to solve problems myself everywhere, but we're working all around the company to get everyone to, yeah, rising tide lifts all ships kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So just as we're wrapping up here, one of the questions that I've been thinking about for a little while is, yes, you have big wins and big successes, but if no one's ever happy with where they are, and you know, I'm not literally meaning that, but complacency is your biggest enemy. You're never really happy because there's always a way to improve something. How do you feel? How do you get saying it's good enough and I'm happy with the company? Do you ever get to that point, or is it always something that's got to be changing and moving?
For myself personally, it always has to be improving and changing. That's my nature though. But in terms of like a process itself, usually if it's a machinery based something and we figure out that it's at say 95% efficiency, then we're usually okay to back off and say, hey, we're not going to look at this for at least a year because it's working awesome. So we're going to go and focus on another project. So we try not to spend the whole 80-20 rule of if it's at 80%, we shouldn't spend 80% of our effort working on that last 20%. So we try to make sure that we don't make things too perfect, because you can spend too much time and effort on getting that last 5-10% and just being okay with 90% or 95%.
So good enough doesn't always mean perfect, and, mm-hmm. and knowing that you will come around is just this continuous turning piece of always doing that. So how do you get those feelings of success and accomplishment then in a day or in your work? If really it's always in a state of perpetual motion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to be very aware and intentionally aware of the small wins as well. So you can look back through a week and say, hey, we fixed these four little problems and that was the big win for the week. It's not like, oh, we did this one massive project that's taken 2 years, because then you're never going to feel satisfied or fulfilled at the end of a week.
So is that an intentional process? Do you have like a celebration time, or how do you do that?
Well, for myself, I am intentional with myself every week to look back, and some weeks it's easier than others to get that feeling of, oh, we actually did something useful this week. But it has to be intentional, and I'm trying every week to be more intentional about it, because it's never easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, if you get complacent in wins, then you're just going to eventually just get overwhelmed by just continuously working, and the wins don't even mean anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, getting that dopamine rush of, yes, we got it, right?
Yeah.
Because if you look at a lot of departments, sales or anything, it's like when they score, when they get a customer or this, or get a new opportunity or a new purchase order or whatever it is, there's a big win there, and they can celebrate it. I know I used to work in construction, and when a job was won, they would ring a big bell and the whole company would cheer, and there was like that whereas there isn't, because you're constantly in motion, there isn't that final finish line every time, right?
Exactly. Yeah, every finish line is just the basis for the next one.
Well, thanks so much for just taking us on a fascinating journey of continuous improvement. I imagine, you know, we'll come back and talk about this again, especially if it's always improving and always changing. Is there any final thoughts as you think about continuous improvement that would be that you'd like to share?
This one super interesting quote that I heard a while back, and I'm going to screw it up, but it said something along the lines of, innovation is solving deeply personal problems. And I try to use that in my everyday work, that if I'm solving a problem that someone's having and it's being painful for them and I can fix that, then we're making the company better as well.
So it's really about making people's lives better. Yeah, sure, you got this machine, you got this and all that stuff going, but it's really about if we're removing pain in people's lives, that's innovation.
Exactly.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely a great place to end, because if that's continuous improvement, then thanks very much for
sharing. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.